Chapter 21. True to the doctor's word, Danny's out of the hospital less than 24 hours later. That's good, because every beep of a monitor is making him want to claw his own ears off. His parents are back from Hawaii, but he's managed to convince them that, really, the accident wasn't that bad. He just fell off a balcony. It's no big deal. Fortunately, his injuries have improved to the point that the doctor is able to reassure them that he'll recover without incident. Of course, the awkward problem is that Danny's parents then want to take him home and fuss over him. Stiles is trying to find a way to solve this problem when Danny just gives him a reassuring, "I've got this," and says, "Actually, I'm gonna go hang out at Stiles. I feel fine, honestly. I'm sorry they dragged you back from Hawaii." "Are you sure?" his father says. "Yeah, Dad, I'm fine," Danny says. Once his parents are gone and Danny's been wheeled out of the hospital, Stiles says, "Dude, what? That was fucking awesome!" One of the benefits of being gay and having supportive parents is that they want to be supportive of everything you do, Danny says, getting in the front seat. "I mean, I could say anything from, I'm going to get a tattoo, to, I'm changing my name to an apostrophe, and they would just say, if you think that's the right decision for you, you should go for it, honey." There's a funny noise from the back seat that quickly erupts into an actual bubble of laughter from Derek. It's over quickly, after which he raises a hand and says, "I'm okay." "Dude," Stiles says. You made Derek laugh." Lydia stares at Danny in open astonishment. "Is that not normal?" Danny asks cautiously. "Dude, look at him," Stiles says, gesturing to Derek, who's already scowling again. "Is that the face of someone who laughs easily?" Danny twists to look at Derek. "I thought he was just in a bad mood because of..." Then he remembers that Derek's last name is Hale, as in the Hale House fire and Laura Hale's weird murder, both of which are a couple of the very few events in Beacon Hill's history that receive capital letters. They're right up there with the Blizzard of 76. "Never mind, you have a point." Derek's scowl deepens. "Don't mind him," Lydia says. Stiles turns slightly in his seat and blows Derek a kiss. "Why do I put up with you?" Derek asks. "I had better be rewarded for this abuse I'm taking." "So this is normal?" Danny asks, to anyone who will answer. Then he looks a little embarrassed as his stomach grumbles. "Oh, yay! It's time to make all the foods!" Stiles says, doing a little dance in the driver's seat. "Yes," Lydia says, "it's normal. Even Stiles' little butt wiggle dance there." Danny watches it and laughs. "If you were my type," he says, but he's obviously joking. "I don't think I've ever seen anyone so happy about having to cook. Most people would just order takeout." "We don't eat fast food very often," Derek informs Danny. "It's bad for Papa Stilinski. He's on a heart-healthy diet." "Uh-huh," Danny says, trying to process the fact that Derek just called the sheriff Papa Stilinski. "Speaking of parents," Stiles says, "on a more serious note, something I wanted to run by you before you go talk to Jackson. Look, you said part of the reason, most of the reason he's so fucked up is because he's got abandonment issues because his parents ditched him, right?" Danny nods once. "Yeah, his birth parents." "Okay," Stiles lets out a breath. "Do you know anything about how much Jackson knows about those circumstances?" "No, he asked his adoptive parents a couple of times and they just put him off, saying he wasn't ready or that they would tell him when he was older. He just eventually decided that he didn't want to know the details." Danny gives a little shrug. "How much worse can it be that your parents didn't fucking want you? At least, that's what he thinks." "Yeah, well..." Stiles clears his throat. "Okay, I did a thing that may piss you off. Danny's eyes narrow. He doesn't like this feeling of possibly being angry at his alpha. What? I looked into it. I thought, if Jackson knew the reason why his parents gave him up, maybe it would help him be less angry about it. Styles lifts his hands in surrender as he pauses at a red light. It was none of my business, and I know it, but sometimes not knowing is the worst thing, you know? No, Danny says. I don't, and I'm lucky for that. He wilts in his seat. What did you find out? Styles fidgets a little. His parents didn't give him up at all. They died in a car accident. His mom was actually pregnant with him at the time, and he was delivered by C-section. Jesus fuck. Danny's eyes squeeze shut. All this time he thought they didn't want him. He wants to shake Jackson's parents, the ones who love him and have raised him, and ask them why they couldn't have just told Jackson this in the beginning. My guess, Styles says carefully, is that his parents thought the whole birth by C-section thing was too gory, which is why they didn't want to give him the details, and they probably never realized the conclusions he was coming to on his own. There is some validity to that, but I think that ship has sailed by now, don't you? Danny asks, his voice heavy on the sarcasm. They should be the ones to tell him. Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes, Styles says. He knows that Jackson's pride is an all-consuming entity, and that wounding it now would be a terrible idea. But he also knows that Jackson should know sooner rather than later, if they're going to be able to help him at all. So he lets the subject drop and continues to drive back to the house, mulling it over in silence. It's quiet there. Jackson's circle is undisturbed, although he looks pretty pissed off to be still inside it. Styles has to bite back an immediate comment about gratitude. Erica and Allison are currently on Jackson watch duty. Erica is playing on her cell phone. Allison is sitting with her hand resting on her bow. Both of them look up when the group comes inside, and their gazes light up to see Danny back on his feet. Don't crowd him, Styles says immediately, and gives Jackson, sulking inside his circle, a significant look. Danny smiles to see them, and part of that smile is very obviously for Jackson, despite the fact that he can't seem to help wanting to stay physically close to the pack and his alpha. Derek moves forward with greetings as usual, both to take the edge off because he knows that Danny's scent is all over him, and to show Danny how things would normally work. He looks from Jackson to Erica. What, you don't make him watch Hours of My Little Pony? Where's the fair in that? Erica opens her mouth to retort something about how Jackson is too far gone for even Twilight Sparkle's lessons on friendship to help him. Then she darts a look at Danny and thinks better of the idea. She leans over to give him a hug, but keeps it brief and foregoes the typical cheek rub. Whoever said life was fair? Danny hugs her back. He just can't help it. Thanks for not impinging on his masculinity. Styles clears his throat. Let's give him some privacy. We kind of have to keep an eye on Jackson, but I thought about that. 2 minutes later, Danny is sitting next to the circle containing Jackson. The only other occupants of the room are two wolves. One of them is a shaggy dark brown, the other charcoal gray, almost black. He doesn't know which two members of the pack are supervising this little discussion, which adds at least a little privacy to it. Derek is lying across the doorway to the kitchen. He, at least, is easily identifiable, because they've all seen him as Styles' service dog. Jackson is just sitting with his arms folded over his chest, not looking at him. Danny leans forward a little. Styles says you gave consent for me, for him to turn me. Thank you. Yeah, whatever, Jackson mutters, looking at the floor. It's my own stupid fault you got hurt. Shit, what was I supposed to do? Danny practically sags with relief. Oh, Jesus, I've missed you. Because that is his friend. pissy and obnoxious, but Jackson. He doesn't know if he has Jackson back all the time yet, but he'll take this as a start. If you start crying, we're done here, Jackson tells him. Dude, I'm gay, not a girl. Give me some credit. Jackson's jaw sets mulishly. So all that stuff about wanting to learn the magic, that was bullshit, right? You were just keeping an eye on me for fucking Styles and his goddamn pack. Danny shakes his head. My goal was to get you back. It wasn't for Styles. It was for you and me. I wanted my best friend back, you asshole. He presses his fingers into his eyes. It wasn't for his... But that pronoun is wrong. It's not his pack anymore. It's our pack. The need to cling and be accepted is still too strong. He manages to say, it wasn't for the pack, and the magic would be cool as hell if it didn't make me feel sort of slimy. If you want to try it again with someone else as a teacher, someone who doesn't turn you into something you're not, then hell yes, I'd give it another try. Jackson won't look at him when he says any of this, particularly not the beginning parts about Danny wanting his friend back. Yeah, well, you're fucking stupid, he says a little too loudly. You shouldn't have done any of that shit. The underlying message is obviously, I'm not worth that. Danny has heard it, or variations of it, out of Jackson's mouth since he was 5 years old. You're a fucking jackass, but that's never stopped me from being your friend. Then he asks the hard question. Are you saying you wouldn't have done it for me? I wouldn't have had to, Jackson snaps. Danny lets out a huff. Can we skip the pity party? Jackson glares at him, but then looks away. After a minute, he says, so, you're healing okay? Yeah, I don't think I'll want to play lacrosse for a few days, but I basically feel fine at this point. Danny puts a hand over his stomach. There's still a bandage over the bite on his arm, and he knows there's some scarring from the surgery underneath his shirt. The breaks in the skin are healing more slowly, but they are healing. Mostly just hungry. There's a pause while Jackson fidgets. Yeah, well, I've been stuck in this circle for an entire damn day, he finally says. At least they didn't make you watch My Little Ponies, Danny offers, fidgeting. He knows that Derek and at least one other pack member are in the room with him. It should be enough, really. But seriously, I can see how that would suck. Just because Jackson's confined because he got himself into some deep trouble wouldn't make it great any less. Yeah, and Styles says they aren't going to let me out until they've taken my magic away, Jackson says. Just fucking figures. God forbid I have something he doesn't. Danny lets out a sigh. His stomach growls and he shifts uncomfortably. It's starting to get difficult to ignore how hungry he is. Look, man, I know that magic stuff was a big deal, but it was changing you. Can't you see that? Jackson doesn't reply for a long minute. Yeah, he finally says. I guess. So that's it then. I'll go back to being some normal kid while the rest of you are all werewolves together. You're not exactly Joe Average, Danny says. I mean, come on. You're captain of the lacrosse team, and you've got a nice car and a hot girlfriend. You were happy with all those things before Styles had a werewolf pack, so why can't you be happy with them now? It's not exactly the same thing, Jackson snaps. And when Danny's stomach growls again, he says, fuck this shit! Will you go eat something before you pass out? Yeah, Danny says, unable to say no. Sorry. He scrambles to his feet and jogs into the kitchen. Styles glances up as he comes in, and Danny has to resist the urge to snuggle. He's not sure if that's because of the werewolf thing or because the conversation with Jackson isn't going so well. Then he focuses on the plate that Styles is holding. It's got several sandwiches on it, all cut into quarters. He can smell bacon and cheddar and toasted bread. The smell is so strong to his newly developed senses that his mouth starts to water. Oh my god, dude. He says, scooping up one of the quarters and cramming it into his mouth without further ado. Somewhat amused, Stiles says, It's the best I can do on short notice. You're not allergic to anything, are you? Danny shakes his head, chewing. He watches as Stiles picks up a pitcher of lemonade and two glasses to go with the sandwiches, then heads back out to the living room. The wolves are still settled there where he left them. Stiles reaches out and swipes a hand over the ash circle. His hand doesn't actually touch it, but the breeze disturbs the dust, moving it out of place. Danny can feel the sudden lack of tension in the room as Jackson reaches for one of the sandwiches. I'll be in the kitchen if you need me, Stiles says, putting down the lemonade. Jackson looks a little suspicious that he's not being sealed back in as soon as he has his food, but doesn't actively protest. It's obvious to everyone that he's not going anywhere while Danny's there. He watches the other teenager scarf down the food. Fuck, Danny, he mumbles underneath his breath. What am I gonna do? Unfortunately for Jackson, Danny hears him loud and clear. You're going to let them do whatever it is they need to do to make you safe, he says. Then you're going to go home and hug your parents, and let them hug you. They're worried about you, idiot. And then, we're just going to take it day by day, okay? Jackson rubs his hands over his face. Sure, he says. Just like that. The two of them finish eating their sandwiches in silence. Then, rather abruptly, Jackson says, Autumn's a bitch anyway. I know, Danny says, smiling slightly. Yeah, you never liked her. Nope, Danny says. Guess I'd better break up with her, Jackson says. Try to have a little tact about it this time, Danny recommends. Jackson scowls, and it looks like he might have something to say about this, but then the doorbell rings. All the wolves look up, and Stiles jogs out of the kitchen. He nods to the man outside and stands back to let him in. Dr. Deaton, thanks for coming, he says. His voice is a little stiff, almost formal, although he's trying to thaw out. This is Danny, our newest pack member. Nice to meet you, Deaton says, in his usual soft-spoken way. And this is Jackson, Stiles says, gesturing. Jackson, this is Dr. Deaton. He's the local witch doctor, and he's gonna fix you up. Is that what we're calling it? Stiles is still unfazed. According to Dr. Deaton, you have two choices, he says. We can either strip you of your magic, or we can bind it down. Practically, the first means that you'll never be able to do magic again, of any kind. The second means that someday, if we decide you're trustworthy, you may be able to get it back. We talked it over and decided that we would give you the choice. Why the fuck would I choose to have it stripped then? Jackson asks. Because it's not as easy as you think it's gonna be, Stiles says. Did you hear the if we decide you're trustworthy part? That means you'd have to prove yourself to us. That means you're going to have to go into therapy, talk to your parents, take lessons with Deaton, and even then, all you'll get back is the mild stuff. You'll have to fight the impulse to do black magic for the rest of your life. Kind of like a recovering heroin addict. Jackson hesitates. Deaton sits down next to the circle and says, I'd like to talk with Jackson alone for a few minutes, if you don't mind. Stiles gives him a long, considering look, then an abrupt nod. Okay, he says, and heads back into the kitchen, waving for the wolves to join him. They do so rather reluctantly, especially Danny. Of course, they can still hear everything being said. So what are you, my sponsor? Jackson asks, obviously indulging in a sulk. Deaton doesn't let it bother him. In fact, he gives a quiet little laugh. Actually, that's not a terrible metaphor. Because I've been where you are. I know that losing your magic seems like the end of the world right now. But it isn't. You are going to be okay, Jackson. What happened to you wasn't your fault. Work with me, let me help you, and someday you'll have your magic back. And who knows, you might actually feel better about yourself in the long run. Jackson makes a little noise, a hitching sound in the back of his throat. It makes the wolves shift uncomfortably, especially Danny. Stiles gives him a little push and says quietly, "Go." Danny doesn't need to be told twice. He's out of the kitchen a moment later. Stiles gestures for the others to follow him out back. It's chilly, but not terribly so. They gather in groups on the back porch. "Okay," Stiles finally says. "Deaton will take care of Jackson. My dad can take him home tonight. Tomorrow we should go down to L.A. and get a protection charm for Danny." Derek clears his throat. "You have an appointment." Stiles looks at him blankly, then growls. "Motherfucking therapy. Fine. I guess it can wait until Wednesday." "Could you take him beforehand?" Scott asks. "Or could you go tonight?" "We can't go tonight," Stiles says, shaking his head. "Danny's parents might be the supportive, accepting type, but I'm pretty sure they'll want him home tonight. Which is an entirely different can of worms. If we left at 7 tomorrow morning and went to L.A. instead of school, we'd get back 3-ish. But that's contingent on good traffic. And either way, I would never get to Fresno in time for my appointment." He rubs both hands vigorously over his hair, trying to work things out. "Well, why do you have to go?" Allison asks. "Scott and I could take him or something." Stiles lets out a breath. "I want to get a charm for Jackson, too, in case Stone is pissed off that we took his favorite toy away. But in order to do that, Jackson's going to have to answer all of Rebecca's questions, which means that someone's going to have to break the news about his parents to him before that. That somebody should be me, if it's anybody, since Danny doesn't want Jackson to think he was snooping." There's a pause while everyone thinks this over, and then agrees that they can't come up with anything better. They sit on the back porch and talk about unrelated, inconsequential shit for a while. Everyone enjoys the break. Stiles knows there's other stuff he should be doing, but he just can't muster up the energy. His grades will just have to take the hit. He needs to work on tracking Stone down, too. He hasn't had a chance to go through the video surveillance footage from the warehouse, but for now, he just leans on Derek's shoulder and paints Erica's toenails and chats with the others about what's been on TV lately. Deaton comes out to get them about an hour later. "It's done," he says. "He'll be pretty tired for a couple of days, but he'll recover." "Okie dokie," Stiles says, and takes out his phone, texting his dad to let him know that Jackson is ready to go. "We can take Danny home at the same time," he adds absently. When the pack looks at him disconcerted, he adds, "A few of us can keep him company tonight, but if he doesn't want to tell his parents about werewolves, and he doesn't seem to want to, then they're going to want him home on weeknights. We can work out a better system later." "Sounds like a plan," Erica agrees. They stand up and go inside. Stiles is a little antsy, so he starts making more sandwiches for the pack to have for dinner while he waits for his father. They start eating them out from underneath his hands. He tries to fend them off with a mayonnaise knife, without success. His father gets home about 10 minutes later. He shakes his head at Stiles, but there's a hint of an amused smile on his face. "Okay, let's go," he says, gesturing. Jackson has to be helped to his feet, but lets Danny do so without too much complaint. Dr. Deaton is pulling on his jacket. To Stiles, he says, "I imagine that you'd like to talk to me." Stiles lets out a breath. He's more concerned about Danny and Jackson right now, but what Deaton has to say to him is no less important. "Yeah," he says. "Do you mind waiting around?" "I have some patients to check on," Deaton says. "Can you come by the clinic?" "Yeah, I'll be there in an hour or so," Stiles says. He follows his dad out to the car. Derek goes along with him, even though there isn't really room. He shifts into his wolf form, puts on the vest, and then sits in the front by Stiles' feet. Sheriff Stilinski mutters something about seatbelts, but then lets that go. He He drives to the Whitmore house and gestures for Jackson to follow him. "You guys stay here," he says, holding up a hand as if to say, "I mean it." Stiles makes a face but obeys. With the window down, he'll be able to hear what happens, unless they go inside the house. Jackson trudges up the front steps and studies his shoes, hands crammed into his pockets, as Stilinski rings the bell. Mrs. Whitmore pulls it open a few moments later and lets out a gasp that's almost a sob before she throws her arms around her son. He stands there awkwardly, but after a moment, hugs her back. Mr. Whitmore joins them a moment later. He looks like he didn't sleep all night and is happy to add his arms to the pile, wrapping them around both his wife and son. When Mrs. Whitmore finally lets go, she's crying. We were so worried about you. You're grounded till you're 30. And while she's saying that, Mr. Whitmore is shaking Sheriff Stilinski's hand and thanking him about 800 times for tracking Jackson down. Stilinski gives Jackson a shoulder squeeze and says, not unkindly, "You be good to your folks now." And then the three of them withdraw into the house. Danny's is only a few minutes away. He sits in the car rather awkwardly as it idles on the side of the road. "Don't worry," Stiles says, seeing what he's thinking. "Tonight you will receive three visitors." Denny blinks. "Which three?" "It's from A Christmas Carol," Stiles says. "It was a joke. Never mind. The point is that we're used to hosting illicit sleepovers for pack members whose parents aren't in the know. Go inside, enjoy an evening without sorcery and lizards and all that bullshit. You'll see us tonight. Just point out which window is yours." Denny laughs and does so, and then Stiles gets out of the car and hugs him, which is weird. Very weird. Particularly the way Danny has the impulse to shove his nose into Stiles' neck and just breathe. He does it anyway, because he really can't help himself. Then he waves over his shoulder and goes into the house. Stiles gets back into the back of the car, with Derek flopped across his lap. "Fuck, I'm tired," he says. His 3-hour nap the night before just isn't cutting it. He almost doesn't feel up to dealing with Deaton, but he doesn't want the veterinarian to lose his nerve either. That's his next stop. The others are antsy, and they draw straws to determine who gets to spend the night at Danny's. All of them want to spend time with their new pack member, but Stiles knows that too many people will draw attention. They're used to doing their wolf slumber parties on the down low, if they have to, and the maximum number of people who can attend is 4. And he knows that as Alpha, it's his responsibility to be there, so that leaves 2 other positions. Boyd and Lydia win the contest, although Stiles suspects that Allison may manipulate the straws so Lydia's comes up, knowing how much she wants to go. Derek isn't happy about not being invited, and points out that it's not like he ever adds to the noise level at one of these events. He has a point, since his MO is to sit in the corner and brood and occasionally sketch. They do a silent vote to see if anyone will be annoyed that Derek is claiming the right to stay with Stiles. Nobody votes yes, so Derek gets to go. Stiles is longing for the day when all this bullshit is over. Derek is his Lupa, an integral part of his life. But having him there every single moment of forever and always is driving him moderately mad. He's beginning to expect to see Derek when he gets out of the shower, lurking in a corner. He needs some time to himself. If nothing else, he hasn't had a chance to watch any porn in weeks. And as a hormonal teenager, that is obviously unacceptable. But he says nothing about this, rubbing his cheek into Derek's collarbone in approval of his idea of accompanying him to Danny's that night. Scott asks to go with him to the clinic, and Stiles doesn't see any reason why not, so naturally Allison wants to go too. Stiles doesn't want Deaton to feel crowded, though, so he says he and Scott will talk to the veterinarian alone. Nobody has any vocal objections to that, although Derek looks grumpier after the proclamation. The clinic is quiet. The staff have all gone home. Deaton is in the back, brushing a dog's teeth. Scott greets the dog like an old friend and helps Deaton finish up. Stiles shifts awkwardly from foot to foot and then says, "So, this whole Jackson thing, is it really going to work out?"
"Time will tell,"
Deaton says with his usual serene confidence. "No offense, but I feel a little dicey on the idea of him ever getting his magic back," Stiles says. "I mean, I don't think resisting temptation is something that he scores very high on. Hell, to be fair, I don't know that I would do any better. And you are the one who's been talking about how hard it is."
"No, you're absolutely right," Deaton says. "Frankly, the odds of him ever getting his magic back are slim. But if he wants to work towards it, that's his choice."
Stiles shakes his head a little and says, "If you say so. But you run it by me first, before you decide to give it back to him. When you think he's ready. I don't care if I'm 40 years old and living on Mars. You run it by me."
"Understood,"
Deaton says with a solemn nod. Then he heads down into his underground workshop. He comes up a few minutes later with a nondescript wooden box, which he opens to reveal a single bullet. It's obviously been fired, being somewhat crumpled. He holds it up and says,
"This is it."
"I don't know where to start," Stiles admits, hauling himself up to sit on the edge of Deaton's desk. "How do you have that? Why do you have that?" Deaton sits down behind his desk.
"When Sebastian and I left the foster home together, there were several goals that we had in mind. This was one of them. Sebastian wanted to see it. You see, it had been kept in storage as evidence, since his father had survived the murder of his family. There was a possibility that he would go on trial someday. So all the evidence was carefully documented and kept. Sebastian and I broke into the police station and retrieved this. Or, more accurately, I did. Sebastian wouldn't fit through the vent. So he entrusted the task to me, while he went to make sure that his father would never go to trial."
"Why did he want it?" Scott asks.
"Because it has profound magical value,"
Deaton says.
"Sebastian truly has nothing. As a foster child, even the clothes on his back didn't really belong to him. There was never anything of physical value for him to get attached to. But this," he says, holding up the bullet, "this made him what he was. This tiny piece of metal changed his entire life in the blink of an eye. To Sebastian, this is the most meaningful physical object in the world. This bullet represents everything he became."
Stiles nods along. "He wanted it to trade?"
"Yes," Deaton says. "Sebastian knew a day would come when he would have unlocked all the power inside himself. And he knew that he would still thirst for power. This is the only possible thing of value he has if he decided to enter into a pact with a greater force."
"But somehow you wound up with it," Scott says, his brow furrowing. "Did he let you keep it?"
"No," Deaton says. "I never gave it to him. At the last minute, I couldn't. I took two bullets from the evidence locker and gave him the one that had killed his mother instead."
"So even back then, you didn't trust him," Stiles says. "You wanted to have insurance in case he ever got out of hand."
"No, no," Deaton says. "That wasn't it at all. I didn't give him the bullet because I was afraid for him, not because I was afraid of him. Because I knew that someday he would try to use it and lose himself completely," Scott says, nodding.
"You were protecting him."
Deaton nods. "And the fact that Stone now realizes what I did means he did, indeed, try to make that deal."
"Damn," Stiles says. "He tried to do it before coming here to play with me. I don't know if I should be flattered or pissing my pants. Or both.
I think I'll go with both. Despite the seriousness of their situation, Deaton smiles a little. I had hoped I would be able to keep it the rest of my life without him ever realizing I had it. When Derek first got sick, I felt this sinking sensation that he had finally caught up with me. I tried to convince myself it was probably something or someone else. Then I saw the voodoo doll. The dark energy in that spell, it felt like his, but so different. So much more malicious than he had been. So I tried to think that it wasn't him. But then, when I saw the emails, I knew. And I knew why he was here. So, what are we going to do with it? Stiles asks. I don't know, Deaton says. And then he holds it out to Stiles. Stiles just looks at it. Take it. I think you should have it. A little nervously, Stiles reaches out and lets Deaton drop it into the palm of his hand. It feels strangely heavy. What do you want me to do? That's up to you, Deaton says. Do nothing. Give it to him. Destroy it. Use it to destroy him. I don't want to know what your plan for it is, and I won't hold it against you no matter what you do. He reaches out and folds Stiles' fingers over the bullet. It's yours now. Stiles clenches his fist, then pulls it back and tucks the bullet into his pocket. Thanks, he says. But why? I mean, you have to know that whatever I decide to do with it, it won't end well for Stone. Deaton gives a little shrug. I should have given it to you the minute he walked into town. I've always known what he was, and what he would eventually become. But I can't stop him, Stiles. I don't know why I can't, but I can't. Too much of what I am is wrapped up in this. All I can do is not interfere. He stands up and gestures to the door. I'll be seeing you soon, I'm sure. It's clearly a dismissal, so Stiles nods and thanks him. Scott thanks him too, and the two of them leave the office. They meet up with the others and go back to the car, and Stiles sits in the passenger seat in silence, turning the bullet around and around in his fingers.